Welcome to Feedback with Earbuds, a podcast recommendation podcast. I'm your host, Arielle Nissenblatt, and I'm the founder of Earbuds Podcast Collective. Earbuds is a weekly email newsletter that sends you a theme and five podcast episodes on that theme, and each week is curated by a different person. Anyone can curate a list. Learn more and subscribe to the newsletter at earbudspodcastcollective.org. Feedback with Earbuds brings you an interview between me and a podcast industry expert. Then we share our podcast recommendations of the week. So let's get into this week's episode. This episode of Feedback with Earbuds is brought to us by World Gone Good. World Gone Good is a new podcast that features everyday people making the world a little better each and every day in the smallest and sometimes the biggest of ways. The episodes are uplifting and inspiring. And best of all, host Steve Silverman keeps his guests honest, which makes the show really relatable and laugh out loud hilarious. If you need a dose of good, check out World Gone Good podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts. New episodes every Wednesday. And as they say at the end of each episode, until then, be good. Hello, we are back with another episode of Feedback with Earbuds. On the interview portion of today's show, I'm speaking with the amazing Rebecca Nagel. Rebecca has a Wikipedia page. I'm so excited that I got to interview her. Rebecca Nagel is an activist, a writer, and a public speaker. Nagel is a citizen of Cherokee Nation. She's one of the founders of FORCE, Upsetting Rape Culture, which is an organization led by artists and activists who attempt to promote a culture of consent. In 2019, Nagel hosted the first season of the podcast This Land from Crooked Media. That season focused on the case of Carpenter versus Murphy, a pending Supreme Court case to determine the land rights of various indigenous groups in Oklahoma. Today, I'm speaking with Rebecca about season two of This Land. Here's a description of season two from Crooked Media's website. ALM, as referred to in the court documents, is a Navajo and Cherokee toddler. When he was a baby, a white couple from the suburbs of Dallas wanted to adopt him, but a federal law said that they couldn't. That couple, the Brackeens, their case would have been a normal adoption dispute, but then one of the most powerful corporate law firms in the U.S. took it on and helped the couple launch a federal lawsuit. Today, the lawsuit doesn't just impact the future of one child or even the future of one law. It threatens the entire legal structure defending Native American rights. The second season of This Land is a timely expose about how the far right is using Native children to quietly dismantle American Indian tribes and advance a conservative agenda. In our interview, I asked Rebecca about reporting on this story, about her experience as a journalist and an activist, and how she got into audio journalism in the first place. Stay tuned for our chat. After I speak with Rebecca, we'll get into this week's Earbuds Podcast Collective recommendations from friend of the collective, Mila Atmos. Mila is the host of the podcast Future Hindsight, which is a weekly show that aims to spark civic engagement through in-depth conversations with citizen changemakers. First up, let's get to my interview with the creator of This Land. Rebecca Nagel, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Good. Thank you so much for having me.
And where are you joining us from?
I am joining from my house here in Tahlequah, Oklahoma.
Rebecca, can you just tell us a bit about who you are? What's your background? Give us the description.
Yeah, absolutely. Joplin, Missouri, Owatesidola, Telek, Oklahoma, Jinail, Digagi, Gailage, Michael, Sarah, Dunton, Joe, Ojadala, Ia, Mary, Betsy, Dunton. My name's Rebecca Nagel. I grew up in Joplin, Missouri, and I now live in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. My parents are Michael and Sarah, and I have two sisters named Mary and Betsy. And I'm a citizen of Cherokee Nation, and I live here in my tribe's capital city in eastern Oklahoma.
You got into audio a while back. So how did that happen?
It actually happened really unexpectedly. So I wrote an op-ed about a Supreme Court case that was decided in 2020. But when it first went to the Supreme Court, I wrote an op-ed about the case. And Crooked Media, the podcast company, read the op-ed and thought it would be a good podcast. And so that's how This Land was born.
And so This Land is now in its second season, and we'll talk about that. But what was the first season about?
Yeah, so the first season was about a court case that was about the reservation status of Muscogee Nation. And it started in a really unusual place. It actually started with a small town murder that happened in the late 90s. So a man named Patrick Murphy murdered a fellow Muscogee Nation citizen named George Jacobs, and he was sentenced to death by the state of Oklahoma. But in appealing his death sentence, he argued that Oklahoma never had the jurisdiction to sentence him to death, let alone prosecute him, because actually the land where the murder occurred was a reservation. Oklahoma said that Muscogee Nation and four other tribes, including my tribe here in eastern Oklahoma, didn't have reservations, that we hadn't had reservations since the early 1900s. And that question went all the way to the Supreme Court. It was actually a pretty simple question to answer because Congress has to pass a law to take a reservation away, and Congress had never done that. But what the case really was a test of whether or not the Supreme Court was going to really follow the law and recognize our treaty rights, or if they were going to come up with an inventive way, which Oklahoma asked them to do, to get out of it. The Supreme Court made that decision in July of 2020. They affirmed the reservation of Muscogee Nation, and then subsequent cases here in the state of Oklahoma from the reservations of other four tribes. And it was a pretty historic moment. It was the largest restoration of indigenous land in the U.S., in U.S. history. And so it was a big deal. It was exciting to be able to tell that story. You know, in the first season, we get into the case, but we also get into the history of how our tribes came to Oklahoma, how Oklahoma was created on top of our land. And I think it's also a really good primer for folks who maybe don't know that much about tribes and tribal sovereignty to learn a little bit more about it.
Yeah, I think I remember in the first season, you did an episode on how white people essentially were told, go to Oklahoma, there's going to be a big land grab.
Exactly. Yeah. Oklahoma was basically established by white settlers flooding the state and doing everything from murder to, you know, getting people to sign a piece of paper. They didn't know what was on the piece of paper, to theft. So the Oklahoma as a state started out as really a feeding frenzy on indigenous land.
It's incredible reporting, and I definitely recommend that folks check out season one of This Land. So before we talk about season two, tell me about the title. Why This Land?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I think it's a little bit of a play on words. You know, there's the old song that's become kind of the Woody Guthrie song that's become a national anthem. You know, this land is your land. And really thinking in the first season, especially since the debate was about, you know, who has jurisdiction in eastern Oklahoma? Is this still a reservation or is it not? We really tried to make the land almost into a character. You know, I think that places themselves often have stories, and, you know, eastern Oklahoma here is very storied. And so we were really thinking about the land as a character in the story in the first season. But then I think it's more of a broader question about, you know, indigenous rights in the United States and inviting people to think about that history.
I definitely think the land is a character, especially in the second season. I think it was the first episode or so, there is somebody describing the connection of Native people to the land and talking about the umbilical cord within the earth. I thought that was so beautiful. Can you talk a little bit about that?
That was a councilwoman from Navajo Nation. So she was talking specifically about the history of her tribe, which I should say I'm not Navajo, so I can't speak to it as well as she did. But Councilwoman Crotty was talking about how the spiritual significance of Navajo land, and that really they've been there since the beginning of time and they're connected to that land. And so it's not just a place or a home, but it's part of their connection to their land as part of the spiritual well-being of the Navajo people. And specifically in thinking about the context of this child and whether, you know, what's best for this Navajo child to grow up connected to that land or to grow up with a non-native foster family that lived really far away.
So season two is about ICWA, the Indian Child Welfare Act. Is that right? Mm-hmm. How did you come across this story and how does ICWA factor into it?
I have been chasing this story for years. I've been poking around and looking into it. And in that poking around, realized that it was way bigger than what I could cover as, you know, a freelance journalist, and bigger than even what, you know, one article or one story could cover. So we put a team together and spent a season investigating. And so the Indian Child Welfare Act, or ICWA, was a law that Congress passed in the late 70s after a big national survey found that the government had taken 25 to 35% of all Native children and remove them from their families and tribes. So it's part of this long history of systemic family separation in Native communities. And so ICWA was passed in response to that to try and protect the rights of Native parents and also of tribes to stay connected to their children. And it existed for a few decades, and then in the mid-2010s became this target in a weird way. You know, in the past decade, ICWA has been challenged more times than the Affordable Care Act. And it's a really odd cast of characters who are strategically bringing lawsuits to try and get it declared unconstitutional. And so it's white foster parents who want to adopt their Native foster child. It's adoption attorneys, corporate lawyers, and then an entire universe of right-wing operatives, organizations, and funders. And so we looked specifically at this one case that has now been appealed all the way to the Supreme Court and is very likely going to be heard by the court this term. But then we also looked at that broader attack on ICWA and the people behind it and try to really ask, you know, why is this law that's, you know, really a small, one small step towards addressing generations of family separation? How did it become this point of controversy? How did it become this target? And why are these people trying to attack it?
What I thought was really interesting in the beginning of the second season is how you frame these nice, usually white Christian folks who want to adopt, they want to be in the foster care system. They think that by God, they're doing a good thing. But ultimately, if you strip back the layers, they're taking these children and they're participating in this larger system that has taken children away from their community for decades and decades. And I think that's just such an interesting juxtaposition and way to look at this, because it's these white people who think they're doing right.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like, I talk about this in the podcast, but I think if you look at history, some of the most violent chapters of what the U.S. has done to Native Americans were framed as charity at the time and had the backing of the Christian community. You know, you look at boarding schools, which were horrific places where children faced not only systemic abuse, but often death. You know, we're discovering these graves now. And many of those were run by churches and it was framed as a Christian mission. And so I think people run into problems when they think that they know what Native people need better than Native people ourselves, because I think that there's, you know, an inherent flaw in that thinking of that Native people are somehow inferior, that we wouldn't know what is best for our children. And I think whenever you get into that kind of thinking, you get into dangerous territory. And so I think that's a big layer of what's happening in this case, both with the individual plaintiffs thinking that Native children are better off in their home, not only than other Native homes, but they actually fought blood relatives, so that these children are better off in these foster homes than with their own family, which we know across the board, not just with Native kids, but all kids do better when they stay with family. You know, I think down to the deep prejudice and racial bias that's still in child welfare systems. The deep irony of this court case that now is again like waiting on the steps of the Supreme Court and is very likely is that there are these three foster families that are suing to say that ICWA discriminated against them because it wouldn't allow them to adopt a Native child that was in their care. And the wrinkle is that the majority of them won custody. And so of these Native kids that their custody cases became part of this bigger federal lawsuit, the majority of them are being raised in non-Native homes. All of them had a blood relative that wanted to raise them. Most of them had multiple Native homes that were willing to take them. And in the actual custody disputes, for the most part, the white families won. And so it's just, to me, it's deeply ironic that they're the parties saying that they have a grievance when you look at how the Native families were treated, you know, everywhere from how the social workers treated them to the family court judge. You can really see the bias in that. But, you know, it's the white families who are claiming that they were discriminated against.
Of course, and often backed by these larger corporations that for some reason are representing them. That's a real added layer to this. But okay, so the idea for this land is season one was about one court case. Season two is about another few court cases. Is the idea that in the future, you're going to keep covering things that come up in this arena?
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see what happens. So
very cool.
I think I had a real passion for covering this case because it implicates the whether or not we're going to have ICWA to protect future generations of Native children, but also the way that they're making legal arguments that threatens the legal status of tribes. And so the stakes are just so, so high. And, you know, I keep saying, you know, if you care about Indigenous rights in this country, you need to be paying attention to this lawsuit.
Just to go back to the audio of it all, why should this story be told in audio? Did you consider other media?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that it's a very, very, very complicated story. And so there's what actually happened in these custody cases. There's the history behind ICWA and family separation in Native communities. And then there's all the layers of why people are involved in this case. You know, what is going on with the adoption industry that there's actually a shortage of children who are available for adoption. So there's this weird way that the adoption industry is trying to shape policy that more so that more children are available for adoption. Why would these corporate attorneys whose practice doesn't really have anything to do with family law, why are they interested in this case? How did this become, you know, we uncovered a paper trail where these cases were actually just being used to advance a conservative agenda and as a strategic way to build conservative power. And so it's a very layered story. And I think that audio storytelling lets us take listeners through the story layer by layer and really unpack it. And so I think that that's one of the things that I think is special about audio is that you can let a story unfold literally over time, you know, as a listener is listening to the podcast. And I feel like this is the type of story that really needs that time to unfold.
Yeah. And as you said, once you thought you got to the bottom just kept getting lower and lower.
Yep.
Yeah. Really, yep. Really interesting. So definitely make sure to check out This Land with Rebecca Nagel and an amazing team of reporters. So Rebecca, to shift gears a little bit, what are you listening to right now other than This Land? Or
the podcast that I have been listening to a lot lately that I really like is You're Wrong About. Mm-hmm. and then a couple podcasts that came out in the past year that are sort of the same kind of format of documentary storytelling. Connie Walker, who did Missing and Murdered in Canada, is at Gimlet now. And so she's produced her first season with them of Stolen. And it's looking into the disappearance of an Indigenous woman in Montana, but also looking at the broader problem of missing and murdered Indigenous people. I really, really liked that podcast too.
Amazing. Anything you can tell us about the rest of the season for This Land, what we can look forward to and how you might be covering it as the Supreme Court comes to find it?
It was formally appealed to the Supreme Court on Friday.
Wow.
And so we'll probably find out in the next few months whether or not for sure the Supreme Court is going to take it. I think most people, for different reasons, kind of assume that they will. And then, you know, the first few episodes were really examining this case. You know, what happened when this Christian couple in the suburbs of Fort Worth wanted to adopt this Native toddler? And we found that the story that they told in court and told publicly, that the actual story that we were able to uncover is different and a lot more complicated. And then in the second half of the season, we really get to behind this lawsuit. So who are these players that I've mentioned, you know, these corporate lawyers, this, you know, right-wing system, and why did they set their targets on ICWA? And so, you know, the investigative dive, I would say, just keeps getting deeper and deeper as you go along in this season.
Absolutely. Okay, Rebecca, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. And we will link to all of your podcasts, all of the things that you do in the show notes of this episode.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you again to Rebecca for joining me for our conversation. This interview was recorded remotely using Squadcast.fm, a remote recording platform. By the way, I am the community manager of Squadcast, and if you want to try it out, we'll have a link in the show notes of this episode. It's Squadcast.fm. Or you can DM me on Twitter and ask for a free trial. Next up, let's get to this week's Earbuds recommendations. This week's Earbuds curator is Mila Atmos. Mila chose the theme, Abortion Rights Update. Why did she choose it? She says, the Supreme Court is at the cusp of overturning Roe v. Wade. Numerous states have successfully restricted abortion access and are poised to pass even more laws to further restrict abortions. How did we get here and what does this mean for American women? Here are this week's Earbuds picks from Mila. The first episode is from the podcast Amicus with Dahlia Lithwack. and the episode is called Abortion, Surveillance, and Vigilantism, an American Story. Here's what it's about. Are you outraged and hysterical about what's happening in Texas? This episode explains the way SB 8 is meant to work and how it allows Texas to functionally overturn Roe v. Wade and what the Supreme Court decision means. Host Dahlia Lithwack speaks with Professor Michelle Goodwin and Rebecca Traister. The next episode is from Fresh Air with Terry Gross and is called SCOTUS and the Future of Roe v. Wade. Here's a description. Do you want a sober assessment of the ban in Texas and what it means for women all across America? Ian Millhiser, who covers the Supreme Court for Vox and is the author of The Agenda, explains how the right to abortion is clearly in danger, what we can expect from the Supreme Court on abortion cases in the near future, and how the court's shadow docket works. The next recommendation is from the podcast Access, a podcast about abortion, and the episode is called 2021 is a record-breaking year for state attacks on abortion. Here's what it's about. Where else are abortion rights at risk? This is the worst year for abortion rights. It's under attack across various states in the U.S., where the fight for abortion rights has been waged for years. Although Roe v. Wade is legal at the federal level, there are 90 abortion restriction bills at the state level this year. Next up, the podcast is Future Hindsight, and the episode is The Human Rights of Women with Lynn Paltrow. Here's what it's about. Do you know how fetal personhood works in stripping the human rights of women? Take a deep dive into the consequences of recognizing fetal personhood with Lynn Paltrow, the founder and executive director of National Advocates for Pregnant Women, and discover how reproductive health is at the center of the fight for equal rights. And the last recommendation comes from the podcast The Takeaway. The episode is called Corporations Stay Silent on Abortion. Here's what it's about. What are the repercussions of SB 8 on business in Texas, and how does that compare to the bathroom restrictions in North Carolina? This episode reveals how SB 8 has wider repercussions beyond banning abortions. It also provides context for Catholic politicians and the decriminalization of abortion in Mexico. Listen until the 36-minute mark. Thank you to Mila for curating this week's Earbuds Podcast Collective recommendations. We'll have a link in the show notes to all of these episodes and much more. Obviously, this week is a tough topic, so we encourage you to listen to these episodes to really get a sense of what is going on when it comes to abortion rights in the United States. In addition to our weekly 5 podcast picks, we also like to spotlight a podcast at the bottom of our newsletter. The idea is that if you have absolutely no interest in this week's theme, you can still check out the Spotlit podcast for some more audio content. And podcasters, if you want your podcast spotlit in the newsletter and on the homepage of our website, we have an application link in the show notes of this episode. So, this week we're spotlighting the podcast Bodies from KCRW. Here's a description. What's wrong with me? Each episode of this documentary series begins as a medical mystery, but once you peel back the layers, more questions emerge. From creator Allison Berenger, Bodies just kicked off season 3, so there are a lot of episodes to explore. Each are beautifully produced and reported. You can find Bodies wherever you get your podcasts. And that's it for this week. Thanks for tuning in. Feedback with Earbuds is written by Maya Rubin and Ariel Nissenblatt. It's mixed and designed by Daniel Turek, the best in the game. Learn more about Daniel at his website, robotslap.com. The Earbuds Podcast Collective newsletter is edited by Abby Kleonsky. You can find us all over social media. We're on Instagram at Earbuds Podcast Collective. We're on Facebook at Earbuds Podcast Collective. We're on Twitter at Earbuds Podcall. And we're on TikTok at Earbuds Podcasting. Until next week, stay safe and happy listening.